con la Constitución y leyes de la República y con todas las obligaciones y deberes inherentes.
The sounds of protest in Venezuela's Congress Hall yesterday when opposition party member Henry Ramos Alap was sworn in as leader of the House. It's the first time in 17 years that a coalition opposing the president will control Venezuela's Congress. Now, the current president, Nicolas Maduro, the political heir of Hugo Chavez, faces a power struggle, with the opposition coalition having won a strong majority. To explain what this means for Venezuela is Dr. Sean Burgess, the Deputy Director of the Australian National Centre for Latin American Studies and a Senior Lecturer in International Studies at the ANU. Sean, welcome to the show.
Morning.
Sean, Venezuela has a president and a single chamber assembly. How many seats did the opposition coalition win in that single chamber assembly, and is this a significant power shift?
Well, I guess you could say at the moment that it's up for debate how many seats they won. The first initial vote count suggested that they've won 112 of the 167 seats, which is called a supermajority. What subsequently happened is that Maduro has put in some legal challenges with the court that it looks like he may have packed with his own supporters and had at least three of these seats' electoral results overturned. But this is extremely important because the way the Venezuelan constitution is written, the size of the majority that you have in Congress dictates what you're able to do with your political party to the overall system. And Chavez set this up so that he could manipulate things democratically to advance the socialist agenda that he had. So 112 was the magic number. It's called a supermajority. It gives two-thirds of the Congress. And what it does is it allows the opposition to fire ministers, to remove the vice president, to overturn what's known as organic laws, to essentially block almost everything that the president wants to do. It also sets them up beautifully to do a recall referendum in about a year, which they can do halfway through the president's term to essentially have the people vote to fire the president. So I think Maduro probably had a sense that he wasn't going to do quite so well in the elections, but I don't think he was expecting to be put in a position where the opposition controls Congress with so much strength that they can now block and destroy everything that he wants to try and do.
And when the results and the opposition alliance was sworn in yesterday, the head of the opposition alliance, Jesus Torrealba, said if this government doesn't understand the need for change that the people have voted for, then we may use those powers. We may have a new government in 6 months. So this tussle over three seats, this is really like just the start of a long fight by President Nicolas Maduro, would you say?
Yeah, it's a continuation of the struggle that's been going on for 17 years. And to put it in context, there's sort of two different versions of where Venezuela should go. You have the opposition that is largely at one point, it's a spread, but was grounded in the elite of the country that owned most of the resources and were doing quite well under the old model. And the Maduro is sort of the heir appointed of Chavez, who is grounded in the people who were doing very, very poorly in the 1990s. So I think you've had a change in the mentality in Venezuela from the opposition that though we have to bring the people with us or we're not going to be able to actually keep this country together. Whereas it's a very much confrontational attitude from the presidency. So the shift that's happened in Venezuela is you've gone from a political regime and a political system based on conflict and based on demonization of the other, and you're now in a situation which is in some ways quite healthy, where both parties are going to have to engage politics. And this is the very clear message that's been coming out of Chavez's and Maduro's regional supporters. You know, up until, I'd say probably about 5 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, almost no matter what was done in Venezuela by the government, regional supporters like Brazil, like Argentina, like Ecuador, like Chile would say, it's your country, you guys do what you want to do, and it's up to you to decide. You're a democracy, you have free elections, the elections run properly, so there's no problem. And there was a big change, and it started more or less with the election of Macri in Argentina, where he says, if Venezuela doesn't clean up its act, we're going to move to have it suspended from the regional trade bloc Mercosur, which would be devastating for an already crippled economy. This pushed Brazil into action, and all of a sudden the Brazilian foreign ministry has been dropping these sort of notes of clarification notes, making it clear that the Brazilian people expect Venezuela to follow the democratic path during the election and afterwards. And
this very publicly.
Oh, yeah, and it's still in place. And this is a massive change. This is probably has a lot to do with why there was no ballot box rigging and why things came out as they did. And you need to remember that despite it being an electronic voting system, it took a couple of days for the final results to come out. And we knew that the opposition had won a majority, but it wasn't until several days afterwards that the Electoral Council finally released and said, well, it's a supermajority.
Well, what will, if the opposition alliance does manage to hold on to its supermajority and retain that level of power, what are they proposing for the country? Venezuela is currently crippled economically. Some say it's the worst contraction in more than 200 years. What is the opposition proposing?
Well, it's a 10% contraction last year, and they're looking at 6% contraction this year. So essentially, the economy is shut down, and there's an 18.2% unemployment rate forecast for this year as well. I think, what they want to do is try and bring some intelligence and rationality to the models that have been put in place. Now, we can talk about how irrational and how foolish the economic approach of the Chavez government has been, but one thing you do have to keep in mind is that the types of social programs and capacitation programs that Chavez instituted were desperately needed. So his essential prerogative for all of his faults was that the people are being treated badly and the people don't have opportunity, and the state needs to step in and do this. And what you're going to get from the opposition is a concerted and consistent attempt to roll back the state, to open up space for free enterprise, and to decentralize. One of the interesting things that's come up in the research that I've done on regional foreign policy and regional relations is the extent to which countries like Brazil have basically propped up the Venezuelan economy for the last couple of years, and the way that they've been ensuring that food flows and things like that. This is not really proving sustainable anymore. And so what the opposition is going to have to do is try and get some kind of reform in the system so that Venezuela is able to support itself. This is not a poor country, but it has no food. So there's some essential contradictions that need to be resolved.
Reform could be very difficult, though. Just briefly, we saw yesterday, as the opposition alliance was sworn in, President Nicolas Maduro also rushed through new laws freeing the central bank from legislative oversight. It can now tap the executive of the bank can tap the executive government, can tap bank funds without parliamentary review and continue to withhold basic data like inflation and growth. Does this bode well?
No, it doesn't. And this is a sort of a disturbing trend that's been going through parts of Latin America in the last sort of 3 years or so. Argentina has become a mess with statistics. Venezuela, nobody really expects the data to be good. And if any numbers do come out, they're going to be terrible. And there's been a great deal of opacity for the last 10 years. So that's not really a change. But then again, if they have the supermajority, they could maybe turn around and overturn this because they can go after organic laws. They can overturn decrees. So there's going to be a tremendous dogfight. And this is going to put the test, really, to the Bolivarian model, which says, we're a democratic model. We are elected, and the people have spoken. And they've given a mandate to the opposition to keep some elements and to push things in a new direction and reload. And how Maduro deals with that is going to be very interesting. He doesn't have the charisma of Chavez. He doesn't have the personal backing of Chavez. So his ability to do politics on almost any level, it almost comes down to bully force. He doesn't have that sort of fuzzy bring the world with you kind of feel that the great politicians have, which, again, for all his faults, Chavez was a great politician. He created something out of nothing. Maduro doesn't have that.
Dr. Sean Burgess, thank you so much for joining us.
Mike, you're welcome.
Dr. Sean Burgess is Deputy Director of the Australian National Centre for Latin American Studies at the ANU, and he was speaking to us there about Venezuelan politics.